you turn your mic up. You say hello.
Hey, hey.
Yo, yo. Okay. All right, that's enough out of you. We'll turn that back down. All right, folks. Well, this is a special edition of BeerNet Radio, folks. We're very, very privileged to have our Wine and Spirits crew here with us today. We have Sarah Barrett, executive editor of Wine and Spirits Daily, and we have Hannah Kruger, also an editor at Wine and Spirits Daily. Thanks for coming on, guys.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. And so I gave y'all a little bit of rundown of what I wanted to talk about, but I didn't include, I also want to touch on the Discus presentation earlier this week too. Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay. But first I want to talk about Gallo because Britt West, who is the, you know, EVP president of the spirit of Gallo, which is Gallo's spirit division. Anyway, I wanted to talk about how Gallo has gone from this transformation to the largest wine company to now the fastest growing spirits company in just a matter of a few years. And, you know, if you go back a few years with their kind of participation in spirits with like New Amsterdam and stuff, they were deep into the flavored vodka craze, which, as we know, is soft. It's all but disappeared. Luckily, we saw at the summit that David Jabor at Twin Liquors told Tito not to get into the flavor game, and he didn't. And so we have David Jabor to thank for that. But
shout out to David.
Shouts to David. Whoop whoop. And then not much on premise either. But now they've got High Noon and Comos and BMC, which we'll talk about, and Pink Whitney, and blada bing, bada bong. And it all started with brandy because winemakers know how to make brandy because it takes a lot of wine to make a little brandy, just like it takes a lot of everything to make a little beer. Anyway, now they're one of the largest privately held companies in the United States, up there with Tito's, Bacardi, and Sazerac. And as an industry, as we move from proof spirits to a canned cocktail world, the darling of the industry really has moved from Tito to High Noon. And it's the standard now by which I think everybody measures themselves against. And so, Sarah, you interviewed Britt West to discuss High Noon at our summit a month ago in San Diego. And he talked, a lot about High Noon's success. And one of the things, when you ask him about, you know, the share of the category, you're worried about new entrants and all this, he doesn't think of it that way, does he?
And I wonder. No. Yeah, it's interesting because every time I feel like the thing he harps on a lot is that consumers don't care about the base and how RTDs are like too lumped together. So he's like, no, it's not the same. Like, no, yeah. These aren't the same. He's like, this fits a certain occasion. This fits a certain style. And he looks at it more that way, rather than, you know, here's your spirits RTDs or these are the seltzers, these are the teas, you know, kind of thing. I feel like he sees it all as a, from the consumer's perspective, which right. has obviously been the correct view.
I know. I feel like when he was on the screen, everybody was like sitting on the edge of their chair, like taking furious notes, like, what did High Noon do? And he kind of made it real simple. He's like, hey, you know, what's popular right now, guys? Sessionable and low ABV. And, you know,
I mean, you can't ignore too that they were one of the first movers in it being a real spirit, you know,
right,
quote unquote base. And they made that very clear in their marketing up ahead, which I think was also, the key differentiator for them, is they're like, hey, you know how you didn't know what was in White Claw?
Right.
Real vodka's in High Noon.
Which is ironic because he did stress that he doesn't think consumers really care about the base unless you're transparent. But boy, they sure cared when you put made with real vodka in giant letters on the can.
Well, I think that goes to the transparency point, though. It's more so you didn't even know what was in, or right. regular consumers didn't know what White Claw or Truly Base was. So he's like, look, we just came out and said, this is what this is, and just made consumers question, wait a second, so what is,
right.
what are these other seltzer bases?
Yeah. Definitely. I think a little subliminal messaging there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. And then they moved to like, they introduced High Noon Tequila, I guess, in the spring of last year. Seems like a no-brainer. Like, Hannah, do you recall what he talked about, like, why they did that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, tequila is just on fire right now. I can't remember the stats off the top of my head, but, you know, there was obviously an occasion that they were missing out on, or a consumer they were missing out on. So, yeah, so that's kind of why they decided to transition into that as well.
What was the cannibalization of that?
He said it was about 30%. So a little bit, but that's still 70% growth, you know?
Right. It's funny. I honestly believe that number, 30%, because when most, I have found, I've been doing this, you know, as everybody knows, 25 years, everybody fibs on their cannibalization. I feel like everybody just lies. Like, especially the brewers, they'll be like, and this only has 5% cannibalization. I'm like, what? How can that be? It's like, you know, Michelob Ultra and then Michelob Ultra Premier, and it's only 5. No, it's got to be higher than that. I don't know how they're calculating that. But 30% sounds about right, because you either like tequila or you don't.
I think they thought about it too, more like incrementally than taking over. You know, it was just tacking on whatever other consumers that they could, and that cannibalization was like kind of negligible enough. They're like, it's totally mm-hmm. worth going after these other consumers, even if we have to give up a little bit of the vodka based numbers.
Right. Yeah. Do you think that they'll come out with other bases?
I think they might. I don't see why you wouldn't. If it's
Yeah, that, and then they just had that news come out of their new plant in South Carolina, where they're kind of creating a 50-60 year plan to build that out to like 5 times, I think, the size of what it is now.
Right.
And whoever is running that plant, her quote to the newspaper, and I don't think I quoted this in our coverage just because it was, you know, we had a lot to cover, but she said, basically anything, we're going to try it. We're going to innovate. We're going to try to make it. So
right.
Something along the lines of that.
Okay. I guess I missed this thing with Canelo. When did that come out? Is this a new tequila RTD called VMC, which I looked it up and it means Viva Mexico Cabrones, which I thought was funny. Cabron is like jackass, right? I mean, at least where I'm from.
What was their definition in the press release? Like bastard?
Yeah, it's kind of a bastard. Yeah, if you're a cabron, or an insult, if you get called a cabron in San Antonio, you've been insulted. Let's put it.
They're like, you're in on the joke if you get the name.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And it's with the boxer, and their goal is, again, so it's kind of interesting, you know, the tequila base, so they're like, oh, we're going up after the tequila first. And this is also tequila based, in partnership with that Casa Lumbre also. So clearly they have like, they found a missing like consumer and occasion, and they're like, this is how we hit it. And hits it in a different way, since it's supposed to be more cocktail forward. It's higher right. ABV too. It's more like flavorful. So they're like clearly going after the Hispanic consumer.
Right. I thought that was interesting too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because you know, it's like, again, cannibalization. They have High Noon Tequila. This looks like a similar proposition, but the can is very, you know, High Noon is like sunny, beachy. This is like got a, you know, a gnarled eagle that's coming down. It's going to eat your head. And it's very different. Very different proposition. Liquid is differentiated. Like you said, Sarah, it's cocktail based. And he said they're having out of stocks and they've overshipped their forecast. So that it seems to be doing well, but it's only in the Southwest, I guess, at this point. And significantly, it's going through the Beer Network, which I thought was interesting. And the reason he gave, well, I'll let you, what did he say? Like, cause you know, it's spirit based. So you would think they would just lop it in with High Noon, but they decide to go to Beer Wholesalers. Why?
Well, and I think actually High Noon has in a couple states that goes through a beer wholesaler or two. So they're no stranger to the beer wholesaler network. And I feel like Britt made it pretty clear it's a case by case basis, and they're like willing to look at both equally. They're not just going to automatically lump all their stuff with their wine and spirits distributors. Which I mean, it makes sense, right? What have we always been hearing about with RTDs is that the beer network, they're like, we own C stores, we own the cold box, we already do that kind of high volume, you know, deliveries, and this, you know, roughly, you know, the same kind of margin just doesn't have the same appeal for wine and spirits wholesalers as it does for beer. And they just, you know, you think about like merchandising and all that stuff, that's definitely more on the beer side. So I guess it also just depends on where you want to go with the brand, right? So if that's what your goal is, to hit these channels that beer is already dominating, why wouldn't you, right?
Right. The, you know, the way I look at it is that if the word tall boy is anywhere in your forecast plan, then you need to go with the beer network.
That's fair.
You know, beer guys are just better at singles, because you know what? It's a pain in the ass to merchandise a singles bin. You know, I don't think wine and spirits guys are going to spend enough time in the store to be putting, you know, dumping singles into a giant barrel and then putting ice over it and doing all that bullshit that most of these convenience stores have. And I think, you know, people look at chain convenience, they're like, well, it's all in the cooler. But a lot of that shit is just that, yes, thank Wyatt showing me the hot sauce. We got extra hot sauce for the first time from this Mexican restaurant that never, ever, you would think their hot sauce is made out of gold bullion because they hoard it and they give you one little tube for 8 tacos. And Wyatt changed, he asked for extra, but he did it in Spanish. And he claims that's why that.
Oh my God.
Honestly,
it's a pro move.
It was worth interrupting the pod for that.
Yes, because I said it might be insulting. What if their English is their first language? But turns out he was right. We got a lot of hot sauce. Okay, but you know, that goes to our point. I think that was germane to what we're saying, which is, tall boys, those Hispanic C stores that sell a lot of beer, they're not chains. You know, I have a C store on the end of the block. It's independent. Guess what? They have a giant bacteria-ridden tub full of ice that sells the shit out of singles out of it. So
yum,
exactly. That's why I only buy my energy drink and single beers there.
Better I used to walk to that gas station a lot. I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about? By the military base?
It's like so overpriced. The gas is always like 50 cents more expensive than the one down the street.
Well, yeah, they're gouging these military folks to come in and out. It's the only entrance out of the base. So they can gouge. And I go there because I can one wheel. It's like a block away from my house. Yes, folks, we're coming at you from Joint Base Fort Sam Houston, San Antonio, Texas. And I think it's the oldest continuously running military base in the country. Boom. Boom.
Damn. Are they going to play the bugle soon? Or is that
They play it at 6:30 a.m. and at 5.
I can
definitely hear it from here. It's kind of it's a not like when they play it at 5, I'm like, oh, it's time to start my day.
You know you've rotted too long when the bugles are going off and you're not up yet.
Like, oh shit, it's already 5. All right, so Britt West, he said liquid is key, and he said that was the reason why they approached Branya at Fisher's Island. Gallo doesn't make a lot of acquisitions, especially outside of wine. Like, you know, I would say that Gallo, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Gallo seems like an opportunistic buyer. Like, they buy wine brands that they know they can do something with that nobody else can. But as far as outside the box, they don't do a lot. And yet they bought Fisher's Island. And I swear, I can't prove this, but I think they probably met at our summit. Our summit is where deals get done.
It's possible.
Because Branya was there that year.
That's right, because that was San Diego too,
yeah,
right? Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, you
So
know what? I think they were there. That's hilarious.
It's also where Katie Bill Brown from Ranch Water met Diageo. Just saying, if you want
to. All right, we got to up the price.
Yeah. I think we need to fact check ourselves, though, because I think when we interviewed him about the acquisition, he said that they had met years prior.
Like, whatever.
Around 2017, 2018. I don't know. And he was like, don't do
oh,
this.
Oh, yeah. He told her, like, he was like, this is such a bad idea. Don't fucking do it. And
oh
she
my
was
God.
Like, no.
And oh she did God. It.
And then he ended up giving her a payday for it.
Mm-hmm. You know what? He was probably like, you know what? You right. Here
oh,
you go.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Britt's out here mansplaining to Bronya what to do. And then she just girl
listen to women. She
girl
bossed.
He was like, thank God she didn't listen to me because look what happened.
Look what happened. That's awesome. Well, I'm sure he did. I'm sure they knew each other before, but when he saw her on stage and was like, whoa, whoa.
Blown away.
Bronya is a good presence on stage. It helps.
She is
6 feet tall, but yeah.
Yeah.
She's a presence. You don't fuck with Bronya.
Yeah. She's a New England mermaid out there.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah. So the Fisher's Island thing was unique for Gallo because they usually, and he said this, you know, we innovate inside because Mr. Gallo, you know, they're family owned and he's like, we can make anything. So, but when they, on occasion, they'll say, all right, we have a white space here. Let's buy Fisher's.
Well, I feel like that means when they do make an acquisition, it's because they're like, what, this has such a unique proposition or such a strong like flavor profile or like the quality is there that we're like, we probably cannot emulate that.
Right.
They're like, so then the option is to, if we want it, buy it.
Right.
Totally. I think you can't rebuild the story around Fisher's Island. With
right.
Some sort of like Me Too product. So I think it made a lot more sense to just go out and buy it.
Right. And keep the founder involved. I mean, that we're going to get to this, but that's kind of what Deutsch, how they do M&A is really they just start with a JV. But before we get to that, I want to talk about Pink Whitney, because he was like, that's the biggest surprise. If he thought Fisher's Island was a surprise, how about a shot drink that's sold by two hockey guys with a podcast? He's like, now it's a, how many cases did he say it sells now? It's a million case brand.
Did he say a million? Yeah.
Yeah, he did. That's a huge amount in the spirits world. I mean, huge.
And as a line extension and as a flavored vodka, I
right.
think that's what's really.
Right. Right. A lower proof kind of shot drink. And he stressed that, and here's a tip for people that are going out there trying to just emulate Fireball. Sweet and citrus is the goat of shot drinks. Lemon yeah. drops, kamikazes, navel, fuzzy navels, sex on the beach. These are all citrus plays, right? And sweet plays.
Mm-hmm.
And he said pink is a branded version of sweet and citrus. Now, what proves that rule is the exception, which is Fireball. And so this I find fascinating. And tell me, do you think this is going to happen more? Because Fireball, you know, Sazerac really pioneered the notion of, hey, why don't we take Fireball, make it, reformulate it to be malt-based. That way they can put it everywhere. C-stores, grocery stores, drug stores. We can sell it right there at the point of purchase. I mean, it's a brilliant move. And, you know, in Sazerac's case, sell it through beer wholesalers. Because, again, if you're going to sell singles, you sell it through beer wholesalers. So do you think other brands are going to come out with malt-based? Obviously,
I don't think it's a wider trend. I mean, I was really surprised when he said that they made a malt version of Pink Whitney.
Yeah.
I don't know that I see it being a a wider trend, just mostly because, I mean, you think about who did it. So Sazerac and Gallo, both private, right?
Right.
Both with like immense capabilities.
Right.
So I feel like they're just in a unique position to do it. And you have to do it right, though. Right? I don't think every spirit brand can make that transition. Like Fireball kind of makes sense, right? Where you're like, it's just that, you know, like, oh, okay, like it can be an impulse buy. And it's just, you know, you don't exactly always want that in large amounts. I'm just finding right. like a small malt version might be good.
I guess it only works with shot type drinks.
I think so. I think that's the key. That it has to be that kind of occasion.
I do see at that same C-store, Hannah, that you know about, they have these like fake whiskeys. And they're, you know, they're called like Old Cattle Rancher, and it's obviously malt based because it's sold in the C store.
I don't know. They do some sketchy stuff at that C store.
Sounds so gross.
Yeah, right. And it doesn't really taste anything like whiskey. It's just like it looks like they just watered down Everclear and put like a little bit of cinnamon, ugh, a little bit of nutmeg or something.
God,
it's delicious. I buy them by the case now. But
it's worth the gout episode.
It's worth the gout. I get champion.
I think if anything, it would be brand dilutive to some.
It's definitely margin dilutive.
Yeah.
And that's where you get back to the public companies. They won't do anything that's margin dilutive. But you know, to a private company, hey, cash is cash. You know, if it's incremental, then who cares about the margin?
Well, and that was what Britt kind of mentioned with the malt Pink Whitney's. He was like, I mean, it gets us into those C stores and grocery stores in states where you cannot have the vodka version. So you're getting in front of either new consumers in new channels or the same consumers in new channels. So either way, there's something new there.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And I think Pink Whitney is a really good brand to do that just because it feels like, and I don't know how the demographic breakdown, but it feels like a really good entry level sort of drink, like kind of what mm-hmm. we were drinking when we were in the early days. It's that new age, it's pretty, it's sweet, it's easy to drink, it's low ABV, you take shots of it. I don't really take shots anymore and I'm 25, so
wow, so mature.
Well, I just know it's going to be a bad night if I do.
Yeah, well, you think drinking a bottle of Pink Whitney might give you a hangover? The dogs are in. The dogs are in the house.
Dogs in the house.
All right. Yep, get away from me.
She got shy.
Okay. And then Comos, they're real super high-end tequila. I thought it was interesting that because, you know, premiumization slowed down kind of big time last year. But I think Britt made a good point that do you really think 5 years from now, if you squint your eyes, premiumization is going to be less than it is today? And then
you know,
everybody kind of waited like for the answer. And he was like, the answer is obviously premiumization will be bigger than it is today. But I don't, what do you guys think? Is that a slam dunk?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's a bit of a consensus. It's whether or not there's the win it's going to come back, you know, a bit stronger. Cause like, you know, I was at WSWA last week and the sentiment there too was like, look, we kind of forgot that we had crazy growth in 2021, 22. It's like, yeah, of course, 23 was a recalibration, right?
Right.
So now you just have to like get back on track. I don't think it's off track, or it's not a, there's still the premiumization track for sure.
Right. And, you know, this is a little off topic, but all the analysts keep saying that the wine and spirits guys are screwed because there's just a lot of inventory in the trade because they oversold in 22 and it didn't sell through in 23. And of course, in wine and spirits, you don't crush it. It doesn't go bad. It's not like milk or beer, which sucks for them. But
yeah, it just sits in your warehouse.
Yeah. But, you know, it's funny. I heard two executives from Southern Glaciers both said that our inventories are the same as they were in 22 and they're the same. So I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like there's a little disconnect there because I feel like we asked Breakthrough about this too, not that long ago, about their inventory levels. And they were kind of like, no, it's fine. So
yeah, I don't, where's this, all this inventory that's being held?
I mean, it could be at the retailer level.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. But Southern says that retailer inventories are low too. It may just be on people's shelves. Like,
yeah, you know? It's consumer inventory.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing too, is consumer inventory for wine and spirits stays forever. You don't ever throw that like you do beer, or at least, you know. So, all right. Well, let's talk about Josh Wine from Deutsch. We had Tom Stefanci up there. I had no idea he was Chris Stefanci's brother. Chris, of course, runs Columbia Distributing in Washington State.
I know. I feel so dumb not making that connection.
I do.
I was too. Like, how many Stefanci's can there be?
I know. And their sister runs, is it
Treasury? Treasury sales.
Yeah.
She's like their chief sales officer or something.
The Stefanci's got a little mafia thing going here in the beer and wine spirits industries.
I love it.
And the reason I asked if I was pronouncing it right, because Chris gets on me, I always say Stefanci, and he's like, we've only known each other 20 years, jackass, it's Stefanci. But
rightfully so.
Rightfully so. Right. And it was great having Tom there speaking at the summit, because it was just the day before that Josh Wine went completely viral on the internet, on Twitter and stuff. And then he talked about a meme that was going around that's like landing on the moon, and Josh Wine's marketing department going, yes, yeah, we did it. I knew of Josh Wine, of course, but I had no idea it's the largest selling.
Yeah, I mean, they just surpassed Barefoot, which is huge. Crazy. I mean, they've been like, it's been just chugging along, like steadily growing double digits for a long time.
Right. I mean, I don't know if y'all caught, there was a clip on Saturday Night Live where they're doing a skit about those obnoxious cups.
I sent that to Sarah.
Sent it to me.
The Stanley Cup, which by
Quick
the way.
Plug, sponsored.
I freaking have had this for like 4 years. I was way before all.
And now you look like a basic bitch.
Yeah,
I feel like it costs way less when you bought it back in the day. They're like $40 now.
So expensive. No,
this was not $40.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't think Stanley was a household name in that way.
No,
definitely
like,
not.
The only people that used Stanley were like old truckers.
Yeah, and, like carpenters. And
yeah, that's why I got one. And then, God, every time I do something cool, it ends up being lame.
I know.
But it's like,
when I was trying to find that clip, Saturday Night Live did a clip even 2 years ago where Josh Wine was a big part of it.
Oh, really?
Okay. About like a family game night where a mom is... She's like, oh, I love that it's called Josh. And
yeah, right. Josh. And it turns out it's just somebody's dad. And
yeah.
That goes to Deutsch's M&A strategy, is that they'll find something. They go, he said that the metric they look for is velocity per account. And he was just like, he saw that Josh was doing high numbers in the few accounts it was in California. And so he went and did a joint venture with the vintner, and he's still involved and they're doing more things with him. But, he finds a vintner with a good story, partners with them, and then either buys them out fully or just continues to do. I think it's a good, they're kind of they started as an agency, and the agency model kind of, they kind of straddle the agency versus ownership model. Another thing I thought was very interesting, they're getting into spirits more. Everybody's getting into spirits more, right? It's just so profitable. However, you have to spend more in marketing up front in spirits than you do in wine. And the reason
he made a really good differentiation between how you approach those categories.
Right. And do you remember what he said about why you have to spend more?
Yeah, because he's like, there's more brand loyalty.
Boom.
And it takes a lot more money to pull those consumers away. When wine is so fragmented, it's not that hard to kind of jump off the shelf initially, like, oh, a new brand, sure, I'll try it. But it's hard to keep them in wine.
Right.
So it's kind of they're very, very different. And it was interesting hearing him talk about how they take that approach.
Yeah. I mean, it makes total sense. It's true.
Mm-hmm.
He goes like, Josh is the largest wine brand in the United States, and it has 5 share.
Yeah. That was crazy. I was like, oh my God.
Like, Bud Light has 30 share. just to
put and I think Tito's is something like 20-ish, right? Or like, you know, it's so much higher.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Tom says it takes 6 or 7 years to really get a spirit brand going before you start seeing any return on it, if it works at all.
Mm-hmm.
And his marketing advice, one sentence, don't be full of shit.
That's so good.
Which, that's hard for marketers. That's a tall order. You think it's a simple thing, but I mean, it goes back to why Gallo bought Branya instead of just creating a lemonade. You got to have an authentic story.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Yeah.
I know, that was so good. But he's told me, Tom's told me this before about their like initial, like, I hesitate to even call it like a marketing strategy, because they're like, hey, I'm just going to write down these stories you tell me about your dad and building this brand. And then we're just going to kind of throw it out there and let people know. And
yeah, really, I thought that was great. Resonated. He goes, mm-hmm. Yeah, I went to this guy's dad. I think his name was Joe. And he goes, I just took my iPhone and just recorded his stories. And then I rewrote them. And then we went and just got a film crew and filmed him retelling the stories. And boom, you have content.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool. They do limited launches on line extensions. Rosé, their rosé just completely took off, which I think is a no-brainer.
What was funny is when he said, when they initially, his team told him to do a rosé, and he was like, I don't know about that. Like, I don't think that's going to work out great. And they're like, just try it. And then it blew up.
Right. I hate it when that happens. That happens around here a lot, doesn't it, Sarah?
But listen to us. We have good ideas.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But, you know, then he said that he thought that Zinfandel would be a good launch, and it turned out to be a dog.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're doing Prosecco, and it's taken off. It's number 4 in Prosecco, largest California brand.
Yeah, so, and actually most of their varietals are either like the one or number 1 or number 2 right. of each varietal, which is crazy across the board like that. I mean, obviously that's what's going to lead to your amazing growth is
right.
The whole portfolio is kind of a winner.
It mm-hmm. sounds like the Stefanis just have this magic just
killing
touch.
It? No.
Yeah. Like this, because it's not like Tom's just came to this company recently. He's been there forever, right?
Yeah, I think like what, 2007, 2009?
Yeah.
Is when he joined. Yeah, so.
And the interesting thing he said about wine, you know, wine is just a terrible category right now. We all know that. But unless you're Deutsch, honestly.
Yeah.
and maybe Gallo in some instances. But I mean, these are the stats that jumped out at me. 40% of consumption is from boomers. That's up from 37% a few years ago. So boomers are the only cohort that are drinking more wine. And he said, you know, take your vitamins, live long, because we love you.
That was so funny.
Yeah.
He's like, God bless boomers.
Yeah. Nobody is out here saying God bless boomers except for Tom Stefanis. Nobody.
Hey, that's why they're winning.
That's why they're winning. Yep. They have all the wealth. They have all the real estate. So we all have to kiss their asses. And you may think, Harry, aren't you a boomer? No. I'm tired of my son saying, okay, boomer to me. I'm a Gen X. 55.
Really? Generation.
Look it up, bitches.
Look 69. It up. You all exist.
We exist, right. We're the smallest generation, so everybody forgets us. Like, we have no mm-hmm. buying power.
Gen X raised Gen Z, so I have a good allyship with them.
Yes. I think Gen Z is the greatest generation because we raised them. Millennials.
I think you're going to offend the actual greatest generation when you say that.
I guarantee you they're not listening to this podcast. They don't know what one is.
They're like, yeah.
Yeah. So
they're in a nursing home somewhere, unfortunately.
So, yeah. And then Gen X, my little pathetic generation, accounts for 27% of wine sales, and that's staying same for millennials, 27%, and it's staying steady. But millennials are 40% bigger, so they're mm-hmm. that generation is 40% bigger, but they're still only drinking 27% of wine, so way under on per cap. And then mm-hmm. you've got Zoomers, which is even worse. So it's like you got 50%. per cap consumption reduction in wine within two generations. When you put it that way, wine is, let me beep that out. Wine is screwed. Let's just say screwed.
Oh my gosh.
Keep it clean for our wine and spirits folks, because I know that they clutch their pearls when they hear the person. So, and he goes, you know, we fucked it up. We didn't show up with the right wine for this generation. He gave Deutsch a C and the rest of the industry a D grade on addressing this. And he goes, when we have to do it without pouring a bunch of sugar in it, because calories still do count. And you know, they're, for, you know, so far their answer to this is, what's this wine they came up with? Sea Breeze or
Sea Swept.
Sea Swept, which is good. We had it there at the reception.
And yeah, it was like a nice, like very easy drinking white wine.
Right, right.
And since it's a blend, you don't really have to explain it. I think that's part of it too. You know, it's just like, you don't need to know what the varietals are. Like, it's just a white blend. You're like, okay, cool.
Right. And he goes, it tastes exactly how it looks, how the label looks.
Yeah.
That's a great way to put it. You know, and I think he's exactly right on wine digging their own grave by making it so snooty, and so unapproachable. And you don't want to show up at a party with the, oh my God, he got the wrong varietal. Because, you know, when I was your age, Hannah, it was all about, what was that movie, Sideways?
Yeah.
Remember when Pinot was just, well, I mean, y'all may, you don't remember Hannah, but Pinot was nobody was drinking anything except Pinot for a good few years there because of that stupid movie.
And Merlot tanked.
Yes, Merlot tanked. Isn't that funny? And then now it's Cab.
But if you know nothing about it and somebody's telling you something, you're like, yeah, all right, I'll go with that advice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a fine line to walk between like informative and pretentious.
Right.
And I think they have to strike that balance for my generation in particular.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, not
we have good bullshit meetings.
Yeah. Y'all have.
Well, the wine industry used to say like, oh, well, we'll just wait to capture these White Claw drinkers as they like mature. And it's like,
man.
And so Deutsche said that they're like, no, we don't wait for them. We have to capture them now so that you can move them up later down, you know, other wines. But
yeah,
so I think they're finally catching on to that.
Was it Tom who said we don't need to make a wine that tastes like White Claw?
Yeah.
Yep. He did say that. That was a great, I kind of picked out just two presentations to talk about almost at random because I just saw them on my video thing, but there were so many good presentations like this. I just want to plug the summit again because you guys did a great job, Sarah and Hannah, getting these guys to talk, and I just thought the content was fantastic. And by the way, I will have these two presentations that will be available to you on our YouTube channel, which is BeerNet Radio. Just go to YouTube, type in BeerNet Radio. And if you want to watch Britt West and or Tom Stefanski, you can watch the whole thing. So, yeah, I'm just picking certain. I'm not including everybody. I'm just picking certain speakers that we talk about in the podcast and putting it on YouTube so that we have a reference. And I think it'll help people. They can look and see whether they want to come next year. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I'm saying, Big Bird?
Hey, any advertising is good advertising, so
right,
but you can't put them all because then people are just going to wait for the YouTube version,
right?
So
yeah, exactly.
We are lazy. We want to sit at home and not travel.
Yeah. You know what's funny is when I put one up the other day, and there's a filter you can put on that makes the voice sound better without that echo from the hall.
Oh, nice.
What I didn't realize is also it takes out all the applause and laughter. So when I put it up there, I was like, wow, this is awkward. Like you
try
a big joke and then it's just silent.
can you take it down and edit it? Like, can you cut out those awkward pauses?
No,
amazing.
I just took off the filter, you know.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it was like terrible. Very awkward.
If you want good audio, you got to go in person. Sorry.
Yeah.
There you go.
Exactly. And then also keep in mind that we were taping this in the oldest wooden structure in North America that's still standing. And so it's on this ancient wooden plank floor. So every time somebody walked by the camera, it shakes a little bit. Hey.
I think I was also a sleepy camera guy.
I think I was on his phone the whole time.
And falling asleep. He was high. We all know it.
When you walk down the street, you can smell the failure.
Oh my God. What Hannah's referring to is what Francis Creighton. Yeah, Francis Creighton from WSWA was talking about weed. You just walk out of here and smell the failure. And it got everybody riled up, man. That guy is on fire. I love Francis.
He's the best.
All right. Well, real quickly, Discus came out with kind of their yearly, numbers. What do you guys make of that?
Seriously? I mean, it's clearly buoyed by RTDs, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the main thing. The rest of it looks pretty on par, I would say, with what other kind of scan data and BW166 and whatnot is looking at.
Right.
Without spirits RTDs, we are not positive.
No, Proof Spirits had a tough year in 23, mm-hmm. which is none of them have experienced that before. I mean, if you're my age, you have, but if you're, younger, those guys aren't used to being down. When I got in the business, spirits was down like 20% a year. It was just dead. And then it's taken off from there. But what about this year? Is it more of the reason that they didn't ship a lot of booze is because they overshipped the year before after COVID and there's just a lot of inventory? Or do they have a demand problem? Or
I think there's a confluence of factors. I mean, it's crazy growth coming off of crazy growth. Those are really tough comps, right?
Yeah.
And then kind of a weird economic place for people. Like, it's like, oh, the economy's good, but also inflation still sucks. So I'm not really going to spend. We're in a weird spot. And I think people are still not wanting that. Their discretionary spending is not what it was.
Right.
And then, so I think 24 is still going to be tough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I tend to agree with you. And we say, well, but RTDs are up. The problem with that is they're not capturing all of it. Gallo is, if you're a spirit company, if you're Diageo, Pernod. And then the second thing is the margins are lower. They move faster, but the margins are, it's just sold differently.
Well, so, yeah, if you look at Discus is, they lay out like the top five categories by revenue and volume size. Vodka is the largest on both. So tequila is the second largest in revenues, and tequila is still growing. And then RTDs are like the fifth largest in revenues, but they're the second largest by volume.
Right.
So it's like you're clearly seeing that gap there.
Right. We'll see what happens this year with tequila. It's had a nice run, but God, it's crowded.
I think it's still going to keep going.
Yeah.
What I was trying to think of earlier, isn't it that tequila is bigger than the whiskey category now by sales? Or is it volume as well? Or is it by volume as well? Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's both. At least in Discus's data.
Yeah. And how, that's like as recent as like a year ago, maybe, or less.
That's pretty recent.
We were starting to see that in like IWSR or something.
Right.
Yeah, they hit on it first, I think. I'd have to check. Mm-hmm. This is his numbers from last year, but yeah, tequila's just kind of slowly been creeping up and then boom, overtake whiskey, which is huge.
Well, they have.
And they're not that far behind vodka. I mean, but I mean, they're like, vodka's like 7.2 billion and right. Tequila was at 6.5. That's not that.
That is amazing to me. I would have never thought tequila would get anywhere near vodka or whiskey for that matter. But there's a lot of agave. Mm-hmm. lot of inventory of agave, like the hop growers, they always, it's either boom and bust with hop growers. And like I saw mm-hmm. a meme by somebody that the agave growers are looking at the hop growers and saying, hold my beer. I'll show you oversupply.
Hold my ranch water.
Hold my ranch water. Same with wine, man. There's a lot of, isn't it? And don't we have a grape glut going on at the moment?
It's been going on, yeah.
Mm-hmm. God, it just, that's why that business sucks. That's why Constellation
it's
wants
so
to get
tough.
Out of it.
I mean,
yeah. And I mean, so I've only been to two Unifieds where they do the kind of state of the industry and talk about wine grape supply, which isn't something we always focus on in our publication, but
right.
The general takeaway I get is that they're like, the wine industry is incredibly stubborn when it comes to like, mm-hmm. I want to be planting this. And so then like Jeff Bitters from, oh, which organization is he with? Like,
it's Allied Grape Growers.
Allied Grape Growers. Yeah. He's like, every year, pretty much, he gets up there and begs them, like, please pull out some
vines.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, like, you're not planting too much, but you won't pull out these old vines that nobody wants anymore.
Right. God bless Bronco Wine. They'll buy your grapes. They'll buy anybody's grapes. Did I cut that? But I
keeping
<Yeah. them. laughs> I don't know. I mean.
I mean, it's so, you know, and then they have the smoke taint. Wine business, you know, Tom said it. He goes, that's why public companies have such a hard problem being in the wine business, because when you're a public company, all you want is consistency. You don't want volatility. And the wine business is all about volatility.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
A match made in hell, honestly.
It's a match made in hell. It really, I don't know how they do it. Like all these plans, how do you keep a brand consistent over years when every planting is, or every
harvest? So that's something that like Duckhorn has, I feel like, honed in on. Like they're like, we know how to keep that balance right. And that consistency, because that is the hardest thing. But to do that, you need money to be able to go out and fill in the gaps that you're missing, but for, you know, 21 to 22 or whatever.
Right. Right. It's so complex. Does that Silicon Valley Bank, even though that bank is no longer, does that guy still put out his yearly?
The wine division is still there. It's
oh, okay.
It was like absorbed in full. And
okay. So that guy's
Rob still... McMillan leads it, and he's still doing his own thing, and they came out with the SVP report this year still.
Yeah, they even managed to do their DTC one that they do at mid-year. It was just like delayed by 2 months. So those guys are busting it over there. Like,
good.
Props to SVB.
I know, right?
Props to SVB. Shouts, because you know,
is that a word now? Shouts.
It is for me. Yeah.
I haven't caught on
making
this,
it happen.
This vernacular yet.
Hannah,
stop trying to make fetch happen, Harry.
Yeah.
I'm making things happen. Do you stand on business, Hannah?
I stand on business for sure.
All right, good. Good. Because SBB is, even though they got bought out by who? City?
Citizens something?
First Citizen or something?
First Citizens.
Well,
yeah.
Well, we don't know really. But the point is that they kept that wine division intact, and that dude is still putting out that report, which is good. Probably because they saw that, hey, at least they're not investing in tech companies. You know, wine may be the only business that may be slightly better than tech. As far as startups. All right. You know what? That was a beautiful summary of two great presentations and a little bit of data in there. I think this podcast has provided enough value. We don't want to provide too much value, because you know what? You got to pay for that. Subscribe to Wine and Spirits Daily. And how often does it come out? That's a question I get a lot. Well, let's look at the name of the publication. It's called Wine. So that means we cover wine. It's called Spirits, which means we also cover the spirits industry. And then the last word is daily, which means it comes out every day.
Monday through Friday, baby.
That's right. And you know what? We're going to start publishing on the weekends too. How do y'all feel about that? The weekend edition.
Everybody's coming out with those now.
It's just a photo of me drinking wine.
Yeah. We're propping up the industry in any way we can.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody is coming out with those. I thought about it, but it's like, let's just leave our readers alone for 2 days.
Yeah. Don't they? I feel bad for the staffs at those publications. Like, damn, y'all. Like,
yeah.
Just, you ever just rest?
You ever just chill?
Netflix break.
And chill. Go watch Netflix Sideways from like 2002. Get your Pinot on. All right.
That'll be our weekend. Is go watch Sideways.
Yeah.
Go watch this wine Sideways movie.
Well, thanks for being on, guys. We'll do this more often. I appreciate it. And folks, we will be back at you next week with Wednesday Warehouse. And also, I think we have a special guest next week, Rob Todd. Yes, everybody.
Rob Todd.
The Rob Todd.
Rob Todd from Allagash Brewing. He's going to tell us an amazing story. He has an amazing story.
Is he going to share it?
He is. That's the whole reason.
Yes.
And he agreed when he was, he was 0.08 in, and then I have to hold him to it. You agree things when you're drunk. When you're sober, you gotta.
Yeah, he owes you money.
Is that a quote? Where it says like, if you want to learn to keep your mouth shut, you should follow through with things that you agreed to do drunk.
Yeah. Right. Oh, I learned that the hard way. So. All right, guys. Well, take care. Bye. And if I don't talk to you, have a great weekend.
Thanks. You too. Bye.